connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the
computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hello and welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your tour guide, Matt, and with me is...
Galen!
Hey! Clap, clap, clap. We missed last week because of some scheduling and also because of feeling like dog doo-doo, but today I am not feeling like dog doo-doo, at least.
And I am no longer scheduling.
I'm trying to think of what the opposite of dog doo-doo would be, but all I can think of is cat puke, which is also not very good.
What if it's like a really rad cat? Oh, hairballs.
Hairballs. There we go. I'm feeling like a hairball right now. Nope. Doesn't sound quite right.
You know what does sound right, though?
The word right?
Well, correct. But more like right, as in Phoenix Wright, who, as we all know, is a famous video game president. It's the state of the meme.
Oh, the state of the meme. All right, everybody, get out of your seats. We're here to listen to the state of the meme. A yes. New smegment. Wait, no, sorry.
No, hang on. Yes, please do stand and cross a hand over your heart for the national meme thumb. Which is just Rickroll. You will have to pause. This is an interactive segment. You're going to have to pause and Rickroll yourself and then come back. Okay, good.
Okay, yeah. Welcome back to the fold. God, I love those drums at the start, in case you couldn't tell.
Yeah, God, they're just... Listen, Never Gonna Give You Up is an unironically great song, but that's not what we're here to talk about today. So, what is State of the Meme? State of the Meme is a small segment that I introduce basically just to talk about, like, a meme for a little bit. Please don't stop listening.
Don't stop listening. Yeah, we'll get to our feature presentation shortly. This is like the Pixar mini movie.
Yeah. So, basically, I don't want this podcast to kind of become talk about what the current meme is, you know, like we might talk about memes, but I want them to be like, I want us to have a lot to say about them if we do. This segment is basically for talking about whatever the current hot trend is, and to kind of, you know, get in shorter ideas about them that obviously won't like take their entire episode, but will still give us a chance to, like, really dig into meme culture.
Right. You could say that if we tried to do this for a whole episode, it would not be sustainable.
Yes. As you can probably tell, we are going to be talking about Sauce Boy, the Things One video, which is the only reason that sus is known on the internet.
So us.
So yeah, we're going to be talking about Among Us, and kind of specifically what I want to talk about is the meme of the idea of Among Us.
Yes.
So if you're not in the know, which you probably are, but, Among Us is a, video game, got really popular in 2020, features little, like, dudes wearing hazmat suits that kind of look like little red beans that have a little visor. And the game itself is basically kind of like a mafia style game. You have one imposter,
or three, technically, but nobody plays three.
I mean, yeah, three on seven is just a perfect imbalance. But yeah, you have a number of imposters who try to hunt down the other crewmates while everybody's doing tasks. It's a very social game where, you know, you call meetings to discuss who you think is the imposter. You vote them out to throw them out. It's a fun little game. It kind of inexplicably got popular. It wasn't even released this year. It used to be a mobile game, but I think it got on Steam this year. And I would say...
The reason it got popular was because of a Twitch streamer, I believe it was Soda Poppin', played it on stream, and the soda popping effect happened, and then it became huge.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because, like, it just kind of went from this small little game to suddenly a worldwide phenomenon, more or less overnight, and, I mean, a lot of streamers have that effect. I mean,
especially, like, the top five streamers.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times, like, as someone who is not in on, like, Twitch culture or streamer culture, I cannot tell you how many times, like, the Twitter sidebar will be like, nah, popular streamer said this or did this, and all the fans are raging, and I'm just like, okay, who? But I'm not here to whinge like an old man. I'm here to talk about other people whinging like old men.
Right. Yeah, so Among Us became super popular, and with it came memes, but the very idea of Among Us became itself a meme. In the sense that, like, not only it's like people would joke about Among Us a lot, and then they would be like Among Us in blank, like Among Us in VR chat, Among Us in Minecraft, stuff like that. And then people would start to put Among Us in anything and say, hey, look, it's Among Us.
Yeah. So, like, anything that has that shape of, like, you know, red, like red or other color oval that has a smaller oval in it for a visor would kind of become like, oh, look, it's an Among Us character. And the like terminology of it also is part of it. So, like, sus means suspicious. It's something that, like, it's used a lot in shorthand. So, like, you know, red is sus is a common thing to say, or like, I think they're being sus. And so, like, the idea of sus kind of being ruined, quote unquote, by Among Us also became part of it, where, like, just the word sus isn't in and of itself kind of just an immediate, like, now I have to think about Among Us. But the reason that I want to talk about it is because I think that the idea of being angry at Among Us memes represents something in a way that, like, past memes have not often. So, like, when in any sort of memetic movements, you'll have sort of like the initial bomb of it, and then, like, the sort of backlash to that, and sometimes a backlash to a backlash. Like, that's all part of internet culture. But there's something about Among Us memes that I love and want to study in particular, where I think that in Among Us memes, Among Us is the least important thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's hardly unique to Among Us, but, like, the idea of Among Us being a meme, and thus you having to reference the Among Us memes, it seems to be stemming from, like, a sort of post-meme culture burnout.
Right. It's like you're so aware of memes that it's like the meme is about combating the idea of the meme, that you don't want this to spread like wildfire and be all over the place.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to E. Which E was kind of like, E and deep fried memes sort of were their own thing, where, like, they were sort of a Dadaist, like, post anything meme, where, like, the joke of E and the joke of deep fried memes is, like, it's almost sort of like pointing at the person viewing it behind the screen and saying, you thought that you deserved to see a funny meme just because there's an image on the internet? Shame on you.
So,
like, what is your hubris?
Yeah.
Or thinking you deserve a funny meme?
So, to me, Among Us memes, especially the sus posting sort of like something that's in the shape of an Among Us crew member, reminds me a lot of Loss and of Megalovania, in that there are like forms. They're like these basic forms. Loss is a few lines in a four-panel comic. Megalovania being four notes in a song. And the Among Us meme being like a dome in an oval. It's like these very basic shapes, basic forms that can manifest themselves super easily in other things. And so for one thing, it's very easy to like make an edit of something and be like, hey, look, it's this. But it also causes people who are wrapped up in meme culture to like start seeing those all over the place. And like it gets infectious. And I think part of the animosity is that people realize that like these, like looking for these memes is like inescapable, you know? That because they use these basic forms, they will appear all over the place. And it's more of a lashing out that, like, memes have poisoned your brain and your pattern recognition. You know, it's less... And I don't mean that in, like, a completely negative way, but in the sense that it's very self-aware of, like, how humor works and how memes work.
Yeah, like you said... If there's one thing to stress, it's not that, like, this is a bad thing. I find this interesting because I honestly think it's quite funny. And I think it's quite sort of telling where, like, Loss and Megalovania, I think Loss more so, was and even to this day sort of is still like a haha got you. And the joke is a little bit on the person, like, reading it. It's the equivalent of, like, the circle hand game where, you know, you go, hey, what's this? And then they look at the circle and you go, ah, fuck, I just lost. But, like, it's that but in internet meme culture. Whereas Among Us, the point seems to be more that it's tiring. It's very tiring having this pattern recognition and having been so steeped in this culture and just sort of... It's a sort of inevitability that, like, we all know collectively that this is going to blow up. A bunch of, you know, a bunch of people are going to reference it. A bunch of companies are going to try and reference it.
Like they already have.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like,
I think KFC shared the picture of Jerma doing the when the imposter is sus, and he got them to take it down. Which is a great power move.
I don't often say this, but based, I think that's an appropriate usage of that word.
I think the comparison with Lost I want to make is that it's both late stage and early stage Loss began as like very close to the original comic, but as time went on, people had to be more and more creative with how they hit it. But also as time went on, people got like really, really mad at any insinuation that it would be Loss, to where like even just posting a four panel comic that vaguely had two figures on it, people would be like, is this Loss? Oh no. I think Among Us is already at that stage where people are worried about the insinuation that it is an Among Us crew member, but people haven't had to get creative with hiding it. At the same time, though, there are a lot of everyday objects that have been posted, like trash cans is a big example.
Yeah.
These, like, domed trash cans with little flaps on them. I've seen a few of those that are used in this case to be, like, sus trash can or whatever. And I think it's that, like, that realization that these figures will appear in real life that makes it more scary.
One of my favorite examples, and honestly, I would say the picture that sort of made me go, I want to talk about this, it's an image of like a school fire alarm that's just, you know, red boxy looking thing and clear looking, you know, visor, quote unquote, on the upper half. And the impact font around it is like, I can't fucking take it anymore. I'm going to fucking lose my mind.
Yeah, exactly.
With no other context. There's no other, like, illusion that it is Among Us. It entirely relies on the reader knowing, hey, look, it's an Among Us.
Right. It both relies on the reader knowing it's an Among Us, but it also reinforces that idea of, like, everything is Among Us. I can't take it.
Yeah.
So the only person who would really get the joke is somebody who could sympathize with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to sidebar highlight that, like, Among Us itself is actually a decent game and is actually, like, apparently run by decent people. Like, the creators of Among Us stopped making Among Us 2 because they were like, well, shit, everybody's liking Among Us, and we should focus on this and focus on new content for this and stuff like that. Like, Among Us, the quality of the origin of the meme has nothing to do with the meme a lot of right. the time.
Also, like, the game is very well designed. On Board Game Bros, my other podcast, we did an episode on it that really touched on, like, a lot of the clever design choices it makes. And its popularity isn't in spite of its success, like, its quality. It is very good, and it's deserving of its quality, or its success.
Yeah. I wish the creators all the best, and I do hope that the sort of explosion that they get propels them to greater heights.
Yeah. Okay. So, that's state of the meme. Y'all can sit back down, be humble. It's time for our feature presentation, I suppose, then.
Indeed.
So, we talked a lot about, like, kind of existential dread at memes, but we're going to spin it back and talk about a much more lighthearted show, something that's very funny, but also not hyper ironic or critical. We are talking about Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun, a Netflix series released in 2020, filmed before the pandemic, of course, but released during it, and it's a great activity. It's like, what, 8 episodes?
6.
6 episodes. Very short, very fun. That's like long movie length.
Yeah, it's not even, like, it's 6 episodes, but they're not even hour-long episodes. It's 6, like, you know, 23 or so minute episodes.
Right, that's like The Irishman.
Yeah.
That's like Godfather 2. That's right, I said Godfather 2. Nobody can stop me.
The Godfather 2 also. It's I know that I think UK programming is often a 6 episode block. So I don't know if that's like just a thing with the EU, even though this isn't the EU.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the EU. What are you talking about?
Well, I don't know how Australia is. I only have 3 Australian friends.
So yeah, so the series is based off or is consisting of the comedy trio Auntie Donna, which members are Broden Kelly, Mark Bonanno, and Zachary Ruane. They are 3 friends from Australia, and the series itself does not take place in Australia. Instead, it takes place in California, I think specifically L.A., it was produced by Ed Helms and Scott Aukerman, to name a few of the producers. So it has a lot of guest stars from different comedy acts around there and like different Earwolf podcast people. But it primarily stars the 3 main members of Auntie Donna as they kind of just have hijinks. It's like them at a house in L.A. just hanging out. The framework of the show is very, like, kid show-esque. Like, the first episode starts with them singing a song about how anything can be a drum. And while that, like, descends into this, like, really dramatic, like, cult-like moment, like, the joke isn't that it's a creepy kid show, but more like they do things you would do in a kid show. So, like, the plots of later episodes are, like, they're getting ready for a date, or they are going on a treasure hunt, or somebody challenged them to win gold medals at the, quote-unquote, big games.
The so Olympic forth. Games.
The Olympic Games, yeah. Not the Olympic Games. And it has this air of, like, childlike straightforwardness with it. So like the whole time during the like run up to the Olympic Games, they meet the wrestler Awesome Kong, and they're just like, "I challenge you to win as many gold medals at the Olympic Games." And the 3 of them are like, "Okay." There's a lot of these where they just kind of like roll with it, you know?
Yeah. Rolling with it is a very good way to describe sort of like the structure, where it's everything in it. Well, most everything in it flows generally from beat to story beat, but the story beats themselves are almost always some kind of absurd comedy.
Right. It should be mentioned this is primarily a sketch show where each scene is its own sketch, but the episode theme still ties back into those sketches, very like Mr. Show in a way.
Yeah.
So in the Olympic Games, there are a lot of different sketches, but they almost all revolve around sports or preparing for that sort of game or what have you. Or it will just be like the characters reacting to something, and then that becomes the sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much we really need to go episode by episode for this, since it's pretty short.
We really don't need to, like, for episode by episode. I will say of the episode structure, one of my favorite things is that they have six episodes, and they, I would honestly say, theoretically cram an entire year into those six episodes, in the sense that, like, there is one episode that is about being, that is about a date, so you could theoretically be like, oh, that's, you know, Valentine's Day. One episode is about it being nighttime, and so it's the framework of it is like, you know, ooh, it's the spooky nighttime, so Halloween. One of the episodes, I won't spoil which one, but there's a joke at the very end that it's Christmas, and like there's nothing else in the entire episode has been about it being Christmas, but like, you know, it's like, you know, oh, it is Christmas after all. And so theoretically Christmas, I like that they had that sort of like it, timelessness. Is that the proper word for it? Where like just most of the episodes could theoretically be considered the blank episode. You know?
Yeah, it's like they took a bunch of like theme episode ideas and decided to only do those.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if timelessness is the right word. Maybe timeliness.
Yeah.
Very timely. It's about a time. Wow, it's about a time. Yeah. So let's see. I do want to go over a few sort of like general things they do. Or a few general parts of specific episodes.
Yes.
So the first episode, Kristen Schaal plays the dishwasher who asks for rent, and so they kick her out. And then they have to get a new dishwasher / roommate. And they end up with the character Cowdoy, who is like this weird, like, very quiet, very kind of reserved cowboy. It's like, it's a guy in a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And he is their dishwasher. He just like a little spit shine. Cowdoy is in a lot of the other episodes. He appears regularly. And I think that's just like they like to do these sort of callbacks and continuity. It's not as like significant continuity wise. But they do like to do that.
It's more like an Easter egg. So like, there's one episode where actually real quick, by the way, we should mention like we said, short series, but also like it probably will be better if you watch beforehand, because inherently talking about a comedy series, we're going to kind of spoil some of our favorite bits.
Yeah.
Which I'm about to. So if the overall word I would say is that, before we continue, I like Auntie Donna quite a bit, because Auntie Donna kind of represents like standard internet humor to me. And I mean that in a very good way. I don't like standard, not as like, oh, it's just a bog standard. Like it is what I would look at and say, I think that is like the standard humor that I grew up with on the internet. Except it's on a Netflix show with something of a budget.
Yeah. They have done YouTube sketches as well. I really have to recommend the Kiln sketch. It's a very good one.
The Kiln, I'm personally quite fond of masturbating in a tent.
So, it's like, I totally get that. It feels like this sort of 21st century era of comedy where it is definitely inspired or infused with that internet lifeblood. There's a lot of, like, really fast-moving jokes. They do a lot of, like, really non-sequitur randomness to it, but in a way that doesn't feel completely disconnected. I think it's with like randomness, it's easy to fall off the deep end and just go too far with randomness, you know, holds up spoon type of thing, or holds up spork. The thing is, when they have something that feels random, usually it's because they want to do like, they want to juxtapose it with what you're expecting. So like in the treasure hunt episode, when two characters dig out a treasure, it's just a DVD box set of The Crown.
Which is also, it should be noted, a like recurring object gag.
Yeah.
I think.
And so it's like, it's kind of random in the sense that there's no real setup for it, but it is just like, it's to juxtapose instead of like gold, it's this DVD box set.
Yeah. Another thing that I quite like is that they will often do, there are often jokes that like you could probably assume the punchline to, but even when they do a joke that you can probably assume the punchline to, they will usually sort of then have an additional aspect that is kind of completely out of left field in a very fun way. So in that bit, when they dig up, it's not a box set of The Crown, it's District 9.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Box set of The Crown is from a different sketch.
Yeah. Although I believe a box set of The Crown does come up in one of the episodes as well. It comes up at least twice in the series. But they like dig up District 9. And the one of the setups of the joke is that both of these characters are South African. And so they speak with weird, funny accents, but then they both secretly go up to, I think it's Zach is the one.
Yeah.
Who's, yeah. They both secretly go up to Zach and they're like, I'm not actually South African, I'm Scottish. Or, you know, what another accent.
I'm not South African, I'm New Zealand.
Yeah. And it's like, they're both like, you know, oh, I've been, you know, faking that accent for 20 years for this guy. Oh, it's so good to not have to talk in that silly accent. And then at the very end, Zach, they're like, so Zach, is there anything you want to say to us? And Zach's like, yeah, guys, are you both, I think it's both time you both are honest with yourselves. Are you really South African? And the obvious, like, the kind of obvious punchline is for both of them to go, fuck you, of course we are. But, you know, so they do that and it is still funny. And then suddenly out of nowhere, they're both like on obvious green screens and they're like, anyway, we're going to fly out of here. We learned it from watching Medicine Man or whatever. And it's just, you know, the very choppy editing of them just like flapping their hands and flying. Yeah. And it's out of nowhere, but in a way that like you can't get mad at.
Yeah, I also, the joke where it's like, you know, why don't you be honest with yourselves, is another moment that's like a kid show trope that is co-opted by the series and turned into a punchline. I guess another thing I want to mention is that they do, when they have more like edited, broken up scenes, they do a lot of quick edits. So a good example is the trendy barbershop scene where Broden goes into a trendy barbershop and Mark plays this like really, really like bro-y barber. Has things like a hair gel that's a mix of like Jack Daniels, Hawk Semen, and and like something else. I don't remember. But it's really great because like, they keep cutting between Broden just sitting in the chair and then, like, all the other barbers in the shop just dancing and, like, doing the most ridiculous things, like smashing a beer bottle on a counter. Or another example is there's a bit with, like, a psychic, a mind reader, doing, like, a daytime television show. And every time the mind reader does anything, it plays this, like, intro theme song for the mind reader, played by Broden, who does this, like, wacky dance. And then it quickly cuts back to the mind reader being all serious, like, and I'm getting the name of your deceased loved one. It starts with an M.
Yeah, the, I think a common theme you can find is, like, sincerity.
Yes.
So, like, the show kind of looks down upon people who are insincere and sort of, like, reveres, like, being a sincere person.
Yes.
Like, the joke with the barbershop is sort of pointed at, like, the fake, you know, masculinity of it all, of the, you know, oh yeah, you're gonna get a bunch of chicks tonight with that haircut, and, like, the, obviously, like, the psychic bit is, you know, TV psychics being bullshit, but, like, there's a kind of, like, empathy to it, and, like, it's an empathy in some of the jokes that does go challenged every now and again. One of the, like, the very first episode, one of the jokes is, you know, when they have the kids show moment where it's like, hey, your family can be anybody, even a dishwasher. And they, like, look out to their destitute dishwasher, and then they're all like, fuck them, Cowdoy's a much better roommate.
Yeah.
But, like, it is still a through line that, like, consistently comes up, is the sort of empathy for other people being a good thing.
Right. So I want to talk about, like, the three main characters. Obviously, the actors are playing themselves, but it's super exaggerated. So they're very optimistic. They are very, like, forward-thinking. They don't dwell on things that happen too much. They're very excited and energetic. And they are very emotionally available and, like, emotionally open.
Yeah.
And it's really refreshing in a way to have that be, like, the main characters. They appreciate each other. Something I thought was really interesting is that the show is very poly positive, or, like, poly pro.
Yeah.
Pro poly. Like, the date episode, the whole idea is that they get an invitation to a date, and instead of it being like they're competing over it, it's just they're all trying to help each other look good.
Yeah. Like, even moreover as well, it's very poly positive. It's also very, like, gender positive. There's one specific segment where they, I think it is brought up specifically, like, he, them, and her as, you know, like, pronouns for various people. But also, like, with the date episode, there's never any, I think literally the only time that they bring up an idea of gender is when they're at the barbershop, and obviously the, you know, the masculine men are like, yeah, the chick's gonna be all over you tonight.
Yeah, I,
like,
think they just call the date a hot date.
Yeah. It's the gender of the date is never, like, a thing, basically.
And if there's one thing I'm not going to spoil, it's what the date actually is, or who it is.
Yes.
Yes.
That's one thing you're going to have to find out for yourself. It's a great bit.
Yes. Yeah, again, it's very refreshing in a way that feels modern and also just, like, very solid and humane, empathetic.
Yeah. Cause, like, there are good jokes to be made about being gay, about being trans, about sort of living your life as something outside of heteronormativity. But there's also something very refreshing about a show where, like, those are pointedly not factors. Like, it is important that they are not important to the show.
Yeah. I think so. The other point of sincerity is a big thing I keep bringing up, and I feel like I never explain well, which is the idea of like a sincere comedy or a sincere parody. I want to try and define it a bit better this time.
Yeah.
I feel like when irony is used to perform tropes, you can tell the tropes are being criticized. And like the comedy is about the ridiculousness of the tropes. A lot of times in Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun, when they use a trope, it's more of a vehicle for other jokes. Like, sure, the joke with like the two South African men, the joke is that like it plays out how you would expect with like not them not telling each other the truth. But the joke isn't that the whole like you should be honest with each other thing is bad or silly. The joke is that the two characters are silly and would be too proud or like too aggressive to admit it.
Yeah.
Or with the whole like it's snowing bit. It's a very much a typical like Christmas movie trope that at the end of the adventure, it's snowing to show everybody that it's Christmas time and that they've done well and whatever. They don't make fun of that directly. They play it off completely straight as if it was just like a cheesy Christmas movie. And I think they even start singing like a Christmas carol or something. But it's not necessarily the joke is that it's funny. The joke is that it's juxtaposing what just happened through the rest of the episode. Like, it's clearly not Christmas time.
The joke is that it is, you know, the ending of, oh, it's a Christmas episode, but without any sort of buildup that the entire joke has, like, the entire episode has actually apparently been taking place during Christmas.
Yeah. I think when they do irony, it's usually because they're punching up. I don't know if it's really irony exactly, but the Ellen DeGeneres sketch is what comes to mind, where it gets increasingly and increasingly more ridiculous. Also, I think they do have a lot of good, like, twists on TV. The Family Feud sketch is also incredible.
Oh.
One of my favorites. One of the ones I quote the most.
Yeah.
On the subject of quotability, by the way, something they like to do is in between scenes, they'll have like a very quick one-liner or a very quick gag. One example is during the treasure hunt scene. There is a sketch where, or the treasure hunt episode, there's a scene where they're doing the like backstabbing, like let's betray Mark and take his share of the money for ourselves. And they do a really good joke with that whole thing. But beforehand, Mark and Zach are digging out, like, a hole in the ground, singing I Love Zach. And then Zach says, next time, I get to choose the song.
Yeah.
Which, for one thing, implies that Mark chose the song to sing I Love Zach, which is great, because they're friends. But also that, like, Zach wants to sing something else, possibly about Mark.
Yeah.
But it happens in the span of, like, 10 seconds, and it's never really brought up again. And I think it helps maintain this, like, fast pace, especially if, like, the end of the previous sketch was on, like, a high note, then the middle part between them is also, a quick joke, which then helps kind of prepare the audience for the slow buildup of the next sketch.
Yeah. This is a little bit of a non sequitur, but it is along the same vein. They do a lot of quick jokes with line of sight. So, like, one of my favorite little small details is there's a part where a character is, like, they have just their head over the fridge. They're, like, peeking over the fridge. But, like, obviously your eyes are going to be drawn to their face. But if you look down below them, their feet are just not there.
Yeah.
Like, they've just completely edited out their feet. Or the most direct example of this is the I pissed myself gag, where, like, Broden is sort of in the background sneaking around, quote-unquote, while Zach is in the foreground. And then he scares him, and Zach is very deadpan, like, yeah, you scared me so bad that I pissed myself. And Broden's like, oh, God, I think you pissed yourself a while ago, and you're just using this as an excuse. which if you notice at the very beginning of the sketch, he clearly has the fistic. They know where your eyes are going to be, so they know where they can hide funny gags.
Yeah, keep an eye out for a pirate skeleton. Or another running joke is that they throw dead bodies in a trash can behind their house, and every time a dead body is added, the previous one is still in there. So, something I think is really interesting with the is that they kind of play with the sketch show structure, but not in like a meta way, in a micro way though. So microwave heating something up. Sort of the general concept of a sketch is that they start with the introduction of the thing. They establish the rules for the thing, like what the characters are or what sort of the idea is. And then they build up to a few larger jokes, and then there's one final joke to cap it off. It's sort of like a curve, you know, going upward, and then sort of plateauing at the side and then going one final upward curve. Something they like to do is they like to really extend the sketches in ways that make sense, but catch you off guard. So, like, there is a bit where Mark says like something kind of rude and Zach starts crying, goes into his room and tears off a poster of Mark on the wall. And then Broden gets mad at Mark and goes into his room and tears a poster of Mark at the wall. And then Mark gets mad at himself and tears a poster of himself off the wall. But then they go to like a FedEx or, you know, a printing place and they're like, hey, can we get new posters? And then the person working there is like, You come in here all the time and you keep getting posters. What do you think we are, made of paper? And they start getting real mad at them. And then they go into the break room and pull down a poster of the trio.
Yeah.
So like you think that like the like you think that there'd be some sort of resolution to the sketch just with Mark pulling off the poster himself. And then it like extends again into this sort of slow moment at the printing store. And then it again picks back up at the end. Another good example of this sort of like catching you off guard is when they're talking about clothes. Sorry, they're crows.
They're crows.
It has this very like Lynchian atmosphere to it. I don't want to say Lynchian because I know that's like overused a lot, but it's like very what's it called? Like very. I'm trying to think of the words, but the dialogue is weird. The camera work is weird. They're always off center in the shots and they're just doing this really creepy bit. And then they do a little joke about how the clothes are like a knock out of the park, like a home run. And then it descends into this long charade that Mark does. But it's something where like it goes with one idea and then it sticks with that joke for a while. And then it just does something else. But it's still part of the same scene.
One thing I love about that joke, too, is that it capitalizes upon the awkwardness, but in universe, it is not exactly awkward.
Yeah.
Like, it's not treated as awkward in universe, but the awkward part is that you, as an audience, are sitting there and watching this entire miming section mime out, or this incredibly awkwardly edited complimenting section get, you know, play out.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of, or not a lot, but there's a few references to how they are kind of like underdogs in the comedy scene. The biggest thing is that in one episode they go out to like interview people on the street and their producer Ed Helms comes up to them and is like trying to get them back on track. And he, like, talks to them like little kids who he's disappointed in.
Yeah.
Until he learns that IMDb messed up and his name is actually Egg Helms. but then later on, they're done recording and they go to play ball. And so they, like, leave the set. They go through, like, the whole recording studio and, like, the back lot and everything. Until they go into, like, a garage and just start playing with a ball. And Ed Helms comes out again and is really upset with them until they're like, this is all like, we work better when we're having fun. Can't you see we did a good job? But, like, it has this whole thing of them being, like I said, underdogs or, like, you know, people trying to prove themselves in the comedy scene that I think is really fun and interesting. Also, it has a great throwaway line by Scott Aukerman that I really love.
Which line, if I may ask?
It's just Scott Aukerman and I cannot remember who the other one was come in as cops. And Scott Aukerman's like, we heard there were people playing with a ball here. They're going to off of it. And then Scott Aukerman says, like, have you ever seen the show Cops? See, it's about these cops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Just a very, like, straightforward thing.
Yeah, I think what makes the underdog tone work is the, like, empathetic angle with it. Where, like, it's a show about, you know, people who aren't punching up and people who ultimately kind of, like, even with some of the bits being about them being rude, are, like, generally nice people to each other and nice people to other people. And so, like, it works with that. It works a lot with that tone because, like, if this were people who had power, quote unquote, or, like, you know, a more well-known comedian, you wouldn't necessarily be able to get that vibe, I think, because, like, there's sort of a bit of a like inherent distrust, I would say, where, like, you really have to work to earn that. But, like, the Auntie Donna boys are good people, or at the very least, like, they give off the impression of being very good people in their comedy. And so, like, you have an inherent trust with them.
Yeah. I wanted to also bring up that they like to sort of poke at them being a low budget production, especially with another meta joke at how a lot of times when one of them is playing a character and they reference their regular character in the scene, they'll show up as, like, a mannequin wearing their outfit.
Yeah.
So, like, Broden will appear dressed up as some other character, and then they're like, Broden, come check this out, and then it'll show a mannequin in Broden's clothes. Like, yeah. They could have just edited him in the scene or, like, done, like, a Parent Trap style, doing, you know, multiple shots or whatever. But they didn't. They just decided to put in a mannequin, obviously, like, drawing to attention the fact that there are, you know, three main actors doing most of the characters. But, yeah, it's like they're just kind of having fun with it, you know?
Yeah.
I honestly don't have a whole lot else to say that's, like, substantial.
Yeah, the reason that Auntie Donna is so fun is just because it's an hour and 40 minutes, and it, like, all of it works. It, all of it is fun. A lot of it is very quotable. It is in and out of your life in less time than it really does take to binge, you know, even some movies. But, like, it sticks with you. And when you go to, you know, Auntie Donna's YouTube channel, there's a whole bunch of other small individual skits.
I do have two kind of fun things here to note.
Yeah.
One of them is that because Scott Aukerman is a producer, there are a lot of Earwolf adjacent actors like Paul F. Tompkins and Sarah Burns. I especially like Paul F. Tompkins playing a jukebox. The other one is that Jack Quaid and Anthony Starr both make guest appearances, so this is technically related to the boys. Anthony Starr specifically is thrown into a trash can. So yeah. And Jack Quaid is drafted off to war.
I could talk forever about just the individual bits and how much I love them.
Yes.
Let's end this off on what is your favorite bit of the entire show?
I really, really like the Family Feud bit. I think that has a great, that's where it has the DVD box set of The Crown.
Yeah!
I think that has just a lot of great little jokes in it. I think my second one would be the Trendy Barbershop, because it's so over the top, but I know exactly what they're parodying.
Oh, man. I asked that question because I figured by the time that you would have answered it, I would have known my own answer.
The Olympic doctor is also very funny because it's just a bunch of dumb characters.
Yeah. My favorite would probably be the posters. That is such a wonderful scene, and it also becomes a consistent, like, a callback joke. But my second favorite is probably the organ donor bit, because number one, it has one of those bits where it is the bit where it's like, put my toes in him and my nose on them, and remembered to put my liver in her, which I just, you know, super appreciated. But it also is just like, it's a fun little song.
Yeah.
And the like little twist it takes is very, I can't put into words how much I love that little bit. But it's only my second. The poster is, it gets me every time.
I think my favorite song was the Isn't It Annoying one with the French man.
Noble. The relatable song.
Yeah. And then my runner-up for the one comedy sketch that was almost my favorite was the History of Basketball. All right.
Oh, for Auntie Donna. Okay. Yeah. The YouTube channel.
No, the History of Basketball is in the Netflix show.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. No, my favorite Auntie Donna sketch is the Kiln sketch. That's one I quote a lot. Watch Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun. It's great.
Yeah, if you don't have access to Netflix, borrow it off a friend.
And at least watch their YouTube sketches.
But if you don't have it in your country's Netflix, then you can use this episode's sponsor.
Somebody you know. Yeah.
Use this episode's sponsor, insert name here, VPN. And then you're gonna get in contact with like all the VPN people, right?
Right, of course.
So we can just like insert their name into whatever the
think
the
of link. It like this. Share our podcast with your friends so that we can get big enough so that we can contact a VPN so that we can give you a sponsorship code so that you can get a VPN for cheap.
Yeah. This is a long-term investment, viewers.
Yes. All you have to do is share this podcast with 10 of your friends.
If you don't share this podcast with 10 of your friends in 20 minutes, then she will come into your house.
Woo!
Thank you very much for listening. This has been NetSurfer Pro.
Yes. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurfer Pro, on Facebook and Twitter. I just said Twitter. But you can also follow us on Facebook under that. You can get updates on when we get our new episodes out. I normally post little teasers, but I really wasn't sure what to do for this teaser, and I wanted to just make sure we had the episode recorded in the first place. So, you know, next time I'll have a teaser.
Yeah.
You can, you know, follow us, listen to us on any podcasting platform you have. You can give us a rating there, give us some comments, let us know what you want to see, let us know how it be do, you know, stuff like that. Give us a rating, really appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. Had to remember my own Twitter. I tweet stuff, I post links to stuff I do, such as my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on weekdays, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time. I stream a lot of roguelikes, a lot of competitive games. I've been playing through Mario 3D World, but I'm like a little more than halfway through now. So if any of that sounds interesting, you can check that out on my Twitch page, which is again twitch.tv/twack. I am really stumbling over my words today.
No, that's fine. I had to take a pause to remember the name of the podcast. You're good.
You can follow my YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/IEatSonic. Or it might just be youtube.com/IEatSonic. IEatSonic. I make videos on pretty much whatever comes to mind. I've done videos on the video game The Witness, which I still need to actually finish that series. I've done some video essays here and there. I've posted, obviously, my speedrun PBs. And pretty soon, I'm going to have up some VODs from a tournament I casted recently. So if any of that at all sounds interesting, you should check me out on YouTube there.
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/GalenWilson. That is twitter.com/GalenWilson. I post various hot takes. I've currently been kind of live posting. There's a thread of Persona 5 Strikers, which is a pretty fun game that I've had some fun with. And I've been sort of putting out my hot takes. If you would like to follow me on YouTube, you can search me up at The Only Galen on YouTube. I still haven't made a proper video, but I've had a few ideas, so I might be posting something kind of soon. Hopefully, by, you know, a couple weeks, I might actually have something to say. And you can follow my Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire. I'm not going to bother spelling all that. Where there may be a streamed D&D series pretty soon. Ooh.
Stream and see.
Be still, my beating heart. Another D&D podcast to keep up with. I know that's what you're all excited for.
I only listened to two, so being in one would be a step above, I think.
That's true. Yes, Twack here is going to be in it, as well as another friend who will be named when I start streaming it. You know how it is.
Yes.
But yeah, I believe that's all the plugs I have. Thank you very much for listening.
Now to unplug my mixer, which means see ya.
See ya.